You understand?
मैं ड्रैकुला हूँ।
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Infernal Brains podcast. I'm Tars Tarkas from TarsTarkas.net.
And I'm Todd Statman from Die Danger, Die Kill, aka 40K.
So today we have a very special episode of the Infernal Brains for you, where we will each be detailing in our long, illustrious journeys across the vast empires of world cinema. We've found like many, many wonderful things and many, many unspeakable horrors. Mm-hmm. And today we'll each speak about one of our unspeakable horrors.
Indeed, which, you know, if you think about who you're dealing with here, it's like asking the guy who cleans the bathrooms at the bus terminal what the, you know, worst thing he's ever seen is. So I think probably our most, you know, maybe our most pandering episode so far, you know, I think.
Yeah.
People love to hear like what the worst of whatever is, and you know, we're happy to oblige, you know, maybe it'll go viral or something.
Yeah. And they instantly go out and buy it despite our best
exactly.
warnings.
I always have the experience. It's the movies that I go out of my way to say are, you know, a soul crushing, you know, spirit wasting experience. And that's the one where I always get the comments from people saying, I have to see that. Mm-hmm. Where can I find this?
Yes. The desperate emails from people. Or,
right. Will you provide it for me?
Yes. We'll trade you gold.
Actually, I thought of something in connection with our theme tonight that I thought of mentioning that, you know, while I, like you, I definitely encounter my share of turds amongst the treasure. I've had like a number of people, like quite frequently, people characterize my blog as being, you know, a bad cinema blog or a trash cinema blog.
Yeah.
I take issue with that. I don't really, you know, I definitely come across bad films from time to time, and I'm very happy to trash them. But I'm really much happier to recommend movies that are really fun. You know, I like to think of myself as being an advocate more than a critic. But, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know how you feel about it. I think you probably feel the same way, Nick. And
for some films, my site has more of a wide approach where it just casts a huge, huge net. And so there'll be awful stuff that I go in knowing it's going to be awful. And then there'll be awesome stuff that I go in knowing it's awesome. And then there's everything in between.
Right. Yeah, there's definitely some. When I see reviews, I know that you can smell those coming a mile away. You're not entertaining any notion that those are going to be good. But then there are other ones, you know, like a lot of the movies we've already talked about in these podcasts that are really, you know, that you're really excited about. I also know you have like I don't mean to turn this into an ambush interview with Tars Tarkas. Gotcha, journalism.
No questions.
Yes. But and you have a sort of a grading system on your site, which has actually always been kind of mysterious for me. You have good, bad, and ugly.
Yes, that had a point once.
Bad and ugly. Good, I get, but bad and ugly seem a little arbitrary. I haven't been able to figure that out.
Well, good, bad, and ugly doesn't mean that the film is good, bad, or ugly anymore.
Oh, okay.
Good films are films that were supposed to be good. Bad films are films that are supposed to be so bad they're good, and ugly are ones that are just supposed to be ugly. But I also arbitrarily put everything Turkish in the ugly category, and I just ignored the good category forever, so it gets like one entry a year or two. So.
All right. Well, you've opened my eyes, actually.
Yeah.
Your site has become like 100% more user-friendly to me now.
Yeah, that makes, you know, slightly more sense than my arbitrary number rating system, which also makes no sense either.
That too, yeah. I don't have any rating system because I don't think it's really fair for me to really try and give a critical rating to movies that I've watched without subtitles, and I have no idea what the people are saying. It sort of removes a sort of important aspect. Actually, even though the film that I'm going to talk about tonight might be sort of a controversial choice for that reason, because it is actually a Thai film with no subtitles, but I feel confident that...
Subtitles are for losers. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Real people just experience it the way they are. There's no subtitles when people talk in front of you on the bus in Cantonese.
So, it's more like real life. It's grittier.
Yeah.
Seize it. You have to seize it by the lapels and drag it under the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
Shall I...
Let's start with your entry.
Okay. I'm very excited to talk about this movie. As I said, maybe a little controversial because this is actually a Thai film with no English subtitles. I'm confident that that while subtitles might make it a little more comprehensible, it wouldn't in any way make it any better or easier to watch. This film is titled King Ka Kaisit, or in English, Magic Lizard, and it's a film by Sompot Sans, who I'll talk about a little later. I don't want to go into too much detail about Sompot Sans because I'm really hoping that we'll do a dedicated Sompot Sans.
He'll get his just deserves in a couple episodes.
Good. I'm thinking maybe that would have to be a 3 or 4 part episode just to really give it the in-depth treatment.
Because your minds will explode and then you'll have to put them back together by the next episode.
Right, yeah, exactly. Cool. And then the final episode will take the form of sort of a counseling session so that we can all sort of process what we've been through. And I will say, actually, it's interesting because before we did this episode, I mean, we've been talking about this episode for a while, and I pretty much instantly decided on Magic Lizard. It really wasn't much of a debate what the worst film I had seen in the course of writing for 40K is. I did actually have a little bit of a crisis of conscience about it, and there's two reasons for that. One is that since I made the decision, Ninja Dixon, who has a really great blog, and who, you know, I won't say he has good taste, but he seems to have taste similar to mine. His site is ninjadixon.blogspot.com.
Yeah.
He watched Magic Lizard, and he obviously liked it quite a lot. Like, he gave it a very positive review, and to the extent that it actually made me question my experience of the movie. Then the next thing that happened was I've been doing these drive-in mob tweet-alongs on Twitter where we sort of, you know, watch movies and tweet along to them. And one of the movies we did a few weeks ago was Bela Lugosi versus a Brooklyn Gorilla, which I'd actually never seen before. I'd avoided seeing that movie. Mm-hmm. Not surprisingly, it was just as awful as I'd always heard it was. I don't know why that's always a surprise, but it did make me question. I had to sit down and think to myself, well, is Magic Lizard really worse than this movie? And to be honest, the jury's out on that. I'm actually not sure if Bela Lugosi versus a Brooklyn Gorilla is better than Magic Lizard, but I decided for this episode I had to dig deep and draw from, you know, my wide breadth and of film watching experience and pull out something a little bit more obscure, because people have been lining up to kick Bela Lugosi versus a Brooklyn Gorilla forever and will continue to do so. And there's
justifiably.
And there's always time, you know. It's like I can go back to it and I can, you know, I can rail against it, you know, until the dying of the light. So anyway, but the horrible thing that happened because of all of this is that, and this is an indication of that, you know, I really follow a journalistic model in my writing about these movies. I felt like it was my duty to sit down and watch Magic Lizard, a film that I had already decided was the worst film I'd ever seen. I watched it again, and God, I fucking hate this movie. It's terrible. And that's one of the things I really hate about it, is that it's the kind of movie where if you just think about things that happen after you watch it, like, you can describe it to someone else, and in hearing yourself describe it, I mean, it'll probably happen to me tonight. you'll find yourself thinking, well, that actually sounds kind of cool. You know, it can kind of seduce you, or you can hear someone else describe it, and it can seduce you into watching it again, to think it was better than it was. And a lot of the reason being that those descriptions leave out some pretty important elements, like pacing, tone.
Yeah, like there's full of a bunch of scenes that should be cool, and you should be enjoying it, but you don't, and there's one or two main reasons why.
And hopefully you people listening will be smart enough not to try and see for yourself. But if you want to, this film is easily available on VCD from Itai CD, so go for it.
Spend that $2.
Yeah, exactly. $2 free shipping. So anyway, brief word about Sampot Sands. Sampot Sands is actually the Americanized name of a Thai director named Sampot Sangduanchai. He, as a young man, had won a scholarship to go to Japan and study film. He worked as an intern at Toho Studios. This was in the early 60s. During that time, it seems like this is sort of in dispute, but he had some kind of contact with Eiji Tsuburaya, the special effects guy behind Godzilla and Ultraman. To what extent is definitely in dispute, but the end result was that he returned to Thailand with that experience under his belt, and he set himself to being Thailand's version of Eiji Tsuburaya and started making within the Thai film industry movies using the sort of miniature effects and man in suit monster effects that he'd learned about in Japan. He made a number of those movies, including a couple of co-productions with Tsuburaya, a movie that teamed the Ultraman characters with Hanuman. He's crazy. His movies are weird, and a lot of them are really wrong. But basically, the thing that he's most known for over here among fanboy type circles is being the guy who hijacked the Ultraman copyright for about 10 years. He was claiming that he had exclusive rights to Ultraman outside of Japan, which totally tied the hands of Tsuburaya Productions in what they could do with Ultraman. There was a court battle that went on for years and years and wasn't settled in 2007. And it was settled against Sampot Sands. He didn't have a claim to it at all. So he's kind of, his fame is more of an infamy. Magic Lizard is a film of his from the early 80s. The basic concept of it is that it seems like they had a frill-neck lizard costume, a man-sized frill-neck lizard costume. They put a guy in the frill-neck lizard costume, and then it sort of seems, judging by the movie, it seems like they just kind of felt like everything else would fall in place around that, you know? Is that right? You've watched some of it, at least.
Yeah, they had like a list of ideas and then threw darts at the dartboard, and that picked what they did next in the next scene.
And then to sort of link that, they used a lot of stock footage and reused footage in between that. I'm generally not big on summary. I'll try and make this quick and as painless as possible, but it's the kind of movie, because it's completely plotless, you really need to describe what happens in it. The movie starts with a long scene of the magic lizard, the guy in the frill-neck lizard costume, roller skating around Bangkok as disco music plays in the background, and he has some dancers roller skating with him who have the frill-neck lizard mask on.
Yeah, rainbow colored.
Rainbow colored, And it goes on. I mean, granted, it's the credit sequence, but the film goes on very long, which the scene goes on very long, which is an early indicator of one of the key problems with the movie, is that every scene seems to really linger, you know, much longer than necessary, especially since nothing is usually being established. So once the roller skating escapade ends, and I think there's a scene where he zip lines across a river too, and showing that he's like extreme and radical. And
as the opening song is in its third refrain of the chorus.
Right, exactly. The endless refrain.
Yeah.
Then aliens and a flying saucer land in Bangkok. And Magic Lizard is in charge of guarding some kind of a treasure, which I think is underneath a temple.
Mm-hmm.
The aliens come down out of the flying saucer, and this is mainly accomplished by reusing footage from another Sompot Sands movie called Giant and Jumbo A, which actually also recycled footage from the Japanese tokusatsu series Jumborg Ace. Another pitfall of this movie is that it relies heavily on recycled footage from other mm-hmm. Sompot Sands movies, mm-hmm. something that Sompot Sands does in pretty much every Sompot Sands movie, but this may be the most profligate in reusing footage. It's almost sort of like a greatest hits reel for him, and you know, lots of recycled footage is never really a sign of a good quality movie.
It's like a Thomas Tang, Godfrey Ho type film.
Yes,
they shoot like 20 minutes of new footage and edit all the existing stuff. But here it's like 50-50, I guess.
Yeah, and somehow it actually makes less sense than a Godfrey Ho movie, which is kind of amazing. The tokusatsu alien comes down, comes into the place where Magic Lizard is guarding the treasure. Magic Lizard has a lightsaber fight with the alien, and then the alien steals some kind of a jewel and flies off. And then the next part of the movie is Magic Lizard freaking out, which is our next pitfall, is that Magic Lizard is very high-strung, talks constantly in a sort of high-pitched, it's sort of like an adult doing like a female toddler voice.
Yeah.
And it's sort of this literally nonstop nattering that goes on. It even goes on behind, like while other people are having meaningful dialogue, you can hear Magic Lizard chattering and nattering. So he freaks out. He goes to the next sequence. He goes to the giant guardian statue, Yukwajang, who is another figure, a figure from Thai folklore that Sands based a couple of movies on, and this gives him more opportunities to use footage from Giant and Jumbo A, which is one of the movies that figure was in. Magic Lizard goes to Yukwajang, obviously tells him this predicament, and then Yukwajang flies off after the aliens. Mm-hmm. And with that, Yukwajang basically takes what could have been the plot of the movie away with him, and it just sort of leaves Magic Lizard at loose ends, which isn't really a good thing. He has time on his hands, and this is where the movie really starts to go off the rails. It becomes completely episodic.
Oh, see, it's brilliant. It's showing what happens when the characters are left behind.
It's true, right. It's...
And it shows why movies don't focus on the people left behind anymore.
It is. It's flying in the face of conventional narrative.
Yes.
You're right.
Yes.
It's like Sucker Punch.
Yeah. Someone needs to write a thesis now.
Magic Lizard Sucker Punch to you. Next we have the crocodile. I gotta talk about the crocodile. So, see, it's hard to talk about this movie without talking about every other Sompot Sands movie.
So everything has a story and another story.
Right. It's like, oh, and that reminds me of thereby hangs a tale. Sands made, I'm not sure which came first. He made a movie called Krytong during the 70s, and he also made a movie called Crocodile, which was his only film that was exported to the English language market. Crocodile being basically sort of a Jaws ripoff with a giant crocodile. And for whichever of these movies came first, he had a giant crocodile, couple of different crocodile puppets made. One was like a full-size giant crocodile, and one is a giant crocodile head that you can put people in and munch them. And ever since every movie he made after that, he uses the crocodile puppet in. There's like, whether it makes sense or not, you know, whether there's any foreshadowing, it's just sort of this totem that he brings out. So of course we have to have that in Magic Lizard. So the Magic Lizard has an encounter with the crocodile, who talks in this movie. And the crocodile chases Magic lizards up a tree and tries to bite him in the crotch. Mm-hmm. And then the crocodile goes on a rampage. And this brings up another issue with Sampo San's movie, is that you can try to defend their stupidity and their sort of and their internal logic by saying that they're children's films, or at least Magic Lizard you could, because it seems like in a lot of ways it's meant to be a children's film. There's even an ad at the beginning for dolls, like a
toy commercial.
Yeah, a toy commercial for Magic Lizard merchandise. But his films in general, and Magic Lizard being no exception, contain a lot of elements that would get you arrested if you tried to show them to children in the West. You know, the crocodile rampage is really gory, and I think it's pretty much consists entirely of reused footage from Crocodile and Kwai Tong. Mm-hmm. But then there's like a skinny dipping scene that ends with the crocodile eating a naked woman with huge boobs. Probably not something you'd see on Nickelodeon or, you know.
You'd have to wait till, you know, Nick at Night.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And then the movie becomes increasingly episodic. Seems like everyone's after Magic Lizard. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some hunters or scientists or like a trio of random guys who are after him. And then he encounters some elephants. And then he dances with the elephants to Baby Elephant Walk. And that goes on for two or three
minutes. Long enough that it was way too long when I had it going at 3x speed.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think there was a lot of that where I was fast-forwarding. I was like, wow, this is so going on. This lingers, no consequence, nothing, you know, it's just sort of, it contributes more to the sort of the ADD nature of the narrative.
I did root for the ratty elephant puppet that they had tried to murder Magic Lizard at one point during this scene.
That's right.
Then he changed his mind and didn't kill him. And then,
well, that's because of the healing and bonding power of Baby Elephant Walk. You know, it can cure all ire. And then there's a weird scene with these treasure hunters in a haunted cave, and there's like a golden fire-breathing ox and giant mosquitoes. Then another long scene where it's like a lecherous old guy in a bathhouse with this young girl, and he's trying to get her to undress. Mm-hmm. And then Magic Lizard shows up and foils that. I'm working up to the good part. And then the next part is definitely the most defining moment of Magic Lizard, and maybe a little bit of payoff for some people who've been suffering through it. It's a scene where Magic Lizard is riding around on a water buffalo. He falls off. Oh, he tries to sodomize the water buffalo with his tail.
Yeah.
And then he falls off the water buffalo, and the water buffalo takes a huge dump in Magic Lizard's mouth. I don't want to, you know, offend people, but I need to impress on people. This is extremely graphic. They really go for the realism with this. It's not staged. It's not like, oh, well, they don't really, you know. No, they really do. They go for it. The naturalism is such that I had to wonder, like, how long did they wait around for the water buffalo to have to go, you know? Mm-hmm. Did they go, oh, okay, he's doing it. Okay, get down there. Because they show the Magic Lizard moving around while the spore is landing in his mouth. So you know that there's a guy in the Magic Lizard costume.
Yeah.
The crocodile shows up, and the final battle with the crocodile involves a monkey which pitches coconuts to Magic Lizard, and Magic Lizard uses a bat and bats the coconuts into the crocodile's mouth. Yeah. And until the crocodile swells up till he's like perfectly round, and then Magic Lizard hitches a leash up to the crocodile and then starts spinning his frill around like a helicopter rotor, and he takes off into the air, dragging the crocodile behind him. Which, I mean, it was actually, when I was watching it, was cool. But this was after a lot had happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Magic Lizard had failed on a lot of levels before that happened.
This is the only part to watch on YouTube.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, someone needs to put that on YouTube because it really is about 30 seconds of the movie. The giant Yuckwad Jang has a battle with the aliens on the moon. He retrieves the diamond that went missing at the beginning, and that's the end of the movie. Thanks for bearing with me on that. I just had to get that off my chest. I think I may never have to talk about this movie again. Summing up about this movie briefly, what I really hate are movies that are really strange but are still really boring. You know, that's what I like about what I look for in world cinema is I want to see things that I've never seen before. You know, and you're seeing these things, they should fill you with wonder. You know, I've never seen a frill neck lizard, you know, use its frill as a helicopter and fly around. I've never seen a water buffalo take a dump in a giant frill neck lizard's mouth. These are things that they should make me wide eyed and wondrous, but instead I'm just waiting for them to end.
Yeah.
And part of the reason for that, I think, is that you realize with a film like Magic Lizard that you're dealing with a director who has no intention and really no ability to tell any kind of conventional story with regular narrative rhythms. So you don't really have any of those markers that you would have in a more competently made film that sort of let you know how far away you are from the end or whether, you know, it's going to end at all. You know, like normal genre films, you at least have a feeling of there being forward sentience, motion and a sense of working toward some kind of goal. But with Magic Lizard, it's not a film that progresses. It just kind of happens.
No structure. It's just get some random pages from scripts, tape them together, and then how much money do we have where we can sell these toys and still make money?
I mean, I think even using this term script in connection with it might be generous. I'd be scared to see what that looked. But yeah, it's just a movie. It happens. It happens to you. It just keeps happening. You don't know if it's ever going to stop. It's incredibly annoying. And with that, I hand it over to you, Tars. Unless you wanted to add anything about Magic Lizard.
I think we pretty well much covered it. So I've seen a lot of stuff from a lot of places, and like there's a lot of like more mainstream or more American type films that are, you know, just absolutely dreadful things, like Uwe Boll or The Room or Birdemic and all those, you know, classic targets. But, you know, they're nothing compared to, you know, some of the horrors that are overseas from the obscure stuff.
Yeah.
And so for my list, there's just one thing stood out just because like there was nothing like it before and I've seen nothing like it since. And it's Shaitani Dracula.
Shaitani Dracula.
Yeah. It's the 2006 micro budget Indian horror film, and not by any Indian horror person you've ever heard of. It's directed, written, produced, and starring Harnam Singh, who... he's been making zero-budget horror films since the mid-90s, like at least old enough to get mentioned in the Mondo Macabro book.
Right, and I think he's out of southern India, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah,
his modus operandi is they get some money together and then film some horror film, and then they drive around to all the outskirt towns in rural India, and they...
kidnap women.
Yeah, they have a special showing and projected, like they'd bring... off the back of a truck onto a screen that they brought along, and then they'd move along to the next town and the next day, which is a lot like the old roadshow type pictures from the, if you've read like David Friedman's book.
Those like Mom and Dad and those Miracle of Birth movies.
Yeah, so those old stuff like that is like, it sounds a lot like those, and that apparently went on at least into the 80s and 90s, although it's probably not as common now, with television being pervasively everywhere. But Shaitani Dracula is the most recent one that's actually been released. And, you know, there's a thread of a plot where Dracula is after a girl, but, you know, the plot doesn't really happen. It's more of...
calling it a thread is pretty charitable, I have to say. Yeah.
It's more of, you know, there's college kids in the woods and a bunch of people wearing dime store monster costume mask wandering around the woods. Mm-hmm. And occasionally they bump into each other and people scream. Harunem Singh is Dracula wearing a cowboy hat, and he says Dracula a lot. And he tries to get a specific girl named Sheetal, who wears increasingly skimpier costumes as the movie progresses. But it's mostly just random scenes of random dinosaur monster costume people wandering around in the dark, and random characters you don't know wandering around in the dark and screaming, or the monster costumes falling apart, or just...
It seems to go kind of on a cycle. Like, it's almost like watching a mirror go around. Like, you know, sooner or later, the caveman guy is going to show up. And sooner or later, the weird girl with, like, the styrofoam wings who's, like, standing on the wheeled office chair is going to show up. And
I thought, like, maybe there's some sort of, you know, rhyme or reason to the bad guys. Or maybe, like, maybe he's saying, well, I'll send out this guy and I'll send out that guy. And he's like, no, he's not saying any of that. It's just, they're just wandering around and they wander in and out of the films, but by the end, you know, most of the monsters have just wandered away and they never deal with them again.
And I don't think, and they don't actually ever kill anybody either. I don't remember. I mean,
no,
the monsters just kind of come out and scare people and they run away.
They grab at them and most they might grab a hold of them for a few seconds and then they run away and escape. And
so it's kind of like Scooby-Doo, except if the women were all buxom Indian women in booty shorts, basically.
Yeah, so imagine, you know, 90-minute part of those 3 minutes of the Scooby-Doo where they run around the haunted amusement park away from the guy in the mask and they play the whatever random song they play that episode. Right. And, you know, 90 minutes of that, but there's no ending where they rip off the mask and they find out it's old man McGregor who would have gotten it away with it if it wasn't for, you know, that blasted Sheetal. Basically, the big features of Chaitanya Dracula, because it's an Indian film and there's a lot of censorship, it's their horror is doubling for their sex exploitation films. So they have the women in the wet saris dancing occasionally, and that's very popular. And I get somewhat disturbing Google image referrals related to that for the one or two times. Yeah.
Because I think these films are basically sort of a form of softcore pornography. Even though they wouldn't qualify it as that over here, but I think Indian audiences definitely.
Yeah, they serve that purpose, even if it's not the official purpose, which is to scare you.
Yes.
So there's that thrown into you, and that explains the skimpy costumes. But it's just so random, and it's so... You know, just people wandering around in Blair Witch style, like it's a reality show, and like, just it's just so different, and so like you'll see like you could theoretically make it like if it was a YouTube video or just, you know, had a bunch of random kids wandering around the woods and like cut it together.
It could be a loop, really, in a lot of ways.
For people like us, the main features are the awful monster costumes, the various monsters wandering around, and
and the scenes. I think you mentioned that where the masks come off and they just keep filming.
Yeah, there's a really ratty werewolf costume, and the guy grabs the girl, and his mask falls off. You can clearly see his face. And they just put it back on and keep going. He's obviously wearing tennis shoes.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he's a trooper.
Yeah. You know, one shot, you know, you know, digital films.
Yeah, they called him One Shot Sing.
Yeah. there's a guy, he's got wearing a skeleton suit, except it's like a luchador Mexican wrestling costume.
He's a paunchy guy, and he's a fat skeleton.
Yeah, he doesn't.
You'd think would be impossible
anatomically. He like almost grabs a hold of someone at some point, but mostly he just walks around. There's the female vampire women who walk around, and there's the one who will randomly have styrofoam wings.
Right, and sometimes not.
And randomly on top of a cart that they're pushing at the people in the woods who pretend to run away screaming as she flies over them.
Right, that's her flying effect as she's standing on a cart or office chair or something with wheels and they wheel it along.
She's occasionally wearing one of the dime store costume masks too, which I was never sure if that was supposed to be her still or a third.
Right, a whole other monster.
Yeah,
another part of the
Because there's also the
menagerie.
Yeah, the She-Tal character. There's also a monster that's her with a rubber mask on. Which
Yeah,
which I think was supposed to be a monster because they have that scare other people too. So it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Just exactly what's going on, and they don't tell you. And, oh, yeah, and there's also the caveman guy wearing the polo shirt with the name tag.
Yeah, I love that guy. And he had, and the scene where he's just kind of looking into the camera, and there's ducks wandering around the background for no reason.
Yeah, the Aflac duck. Yeah. It's like no one bothered to clear the site of ducks. They couldn't afford bread to lure them away. And,
or maybe they thought the ducks were, they saw the ducks and they thought they would somehow add production value.
Yeah. It's the spooky ducks.
Right, they were ghost ducks.
Nice. So I have a rudimentary list of the worst parts and the best parts of the Titanic Dracula because it's like it's bad and it's like he's been making films for like 15 years. And it's got to the point where he still can't make films at all. And it's like it's the most incompetently put together film I've seen. And I've seen like things that are edited from other things. I've seen like really crappy like fan film type productions from people who shouldn't be making any type of cinema at all. It's like I've just seen stuff that's like horribly edited, and it's like this is worse than anything I've ever seen. But
yeah,
it's like
deep.
It's hypnotic that you have to watch it when you're watching it, though, because you're like, you just can't stop watching it because you're like, what the heck is this?
Yeah, I mean, that's I did want to say this. I feel like I have to stand up a little bit for Titanic Dracula. I mean, I think it's interesting because I think both these movies, I think Magic Lizard and Titanic Dracula are both have a lot in common. You know, they're sort of bad in the same, or the things that one might find bad about them are sort of the same, is because they're sort of formless and rambling, and they're both movies, like I said, that just sort of happen and just sort of keep happening and don't have any sense of structure or building any kind of momentum. And interestingly, you know, with Magic Lizard, I found that excruciating, but I actually found Titanic Dracula kind of mesmerizing. Because it didn't have the level of annoyance that Magic Lizard had. And I just found the repetitiveness and the weird kind of... And just what you're saying, Harnam Singh is, like, so incompetent. It's insane. I mean, both Magic Lizard and Titanic Dracula are movies made by crazy people. But while Magic Lizard has this kind of prophylactic layer of irritatingness that sort of keeps you from getting involved, I think Harnam Singh, if you let him, will really draws you into his world. And with me, I was hypnotized by it. And I even found parts of it, he's so obviously out of touch, that I even found parts of it kind of scary a little bit. Like the whole thing with the caveman staring into the camera with the ducks in the background, it kind of freaked me out a little bit, I'll be honest, you know, because it was just so, you know, you don't know what to expect. I mean, that's the one thing that's good about movies like this, is they're so off the beaten path, they're so not playing by the rules, that you really don't know what's going to happen. So, anyway, that's my spiel on... You know, I understand where you're coming from, but I just want to say that I actually enjoy this movie. I'll probably watch it again sometime.
Yeah, it's just like, I'll probably see it again too, even though, like it's the worst thing I've seen in that, like, it's the worst made thing.
Yeah.
But, like, it's not, like, you'll never watch it again. It's like, you know, I have to show my friends and torture them.
Right.
And
it's definitely the kind of movie that you want to make other people watch, if nothing else. Yeah.
It's literally almost impossible to accurately describe. You just have to you have to see Titanic Dracula to know Titanic Dracula.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, and there's... So, let's see. I have a list of the parts I like the least about Titanic Dracula. I did not like that most of the movie took place in the dark, and... Harnam Singh has not heard of lighting, so there's a lot of, you know, black screens or really dark screens, and since it's on a, you know, a VCD, it's, you know, the screen's small and badly encoded as well, And so it's really hard to see what's going on in a lot of it, and that just adds to the confusion. Mm-hmm. And then with all the people bumbling around the woods, like, it's hard to tell which nameless, personalityless male character this is. And it's like, so it got to the point where they're just like, I could recognize the three main women because, you know, one was the main character, mm-hmm. one was always mad at something, and one was always shy. But, like, the guys had no personalities at all except for the comic relief people who, thankfully, were just as randomly appearing as the monsters, so they weren't around so often.
Yeah, I would say the guys were just, like, one amorphous mass. But I will say this about the movie. The other thing I like about it is the girls are really hot.
Yes.
So, and to the point where... it's like, how did he, like, you know, it's kind of, it defies the imagination and logic that he could get these beautiful women to be in this horrible, crappy movie. But, you know, I don't even want to speculate about the story behind that. So anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so they're actually more attractive than several women in some of the more mainstream Southern Indian films.
Yeah.
So it's just weird. And like, I don't, so he must be really good at convincing people.
I think that's his main talent, is convincing beautiful women to be in shitty, shitty movies.
Yeah. And so, let's see. Dracula will constantly monologue about Dracula. It's like every third word he says is Dracula. You don't need to know any Indian language to understand the film, because Dracula likes to talk about Dracula.
Mm-hmm. He's and, like, no one puts Dracula in the corner.
Yeah. He's like, you know, always third person screaming. And with the cowboy hat and his uniform, it makes him look like he's like a Union soldier in the Civil War.
Yeah.
Which just makes it even weirder, because, like, oh, he's the Indian Union soldier Dracula.
It kind of looked like a bushranger kind of hat, like cowboy in Africa or something like that.
So maybe he came out of the jungle to go.
Right, jungle Dracula.
Yeah. So, and there's also... several of the monsters aren't monsters at all. They're makeup tests from other films, or just, you know, random footage that they insert in. And he doesn't bother to, you know, insert it incorrectly, so its aspect ratio is all squashed and distorted, which just makes it even more... it's like, it's not like it's... it's slightly out of focus. It's like way squished, and it's like... it's like...
you're making me want to watch it again, I'm telling you.
Halloween's coming up.
Right, this is perfect Halloween movie.
Yeah, put it on in the background in your party and you'll just...
yeah, get it from Induna.com, I'm sure they have it. And I actually don't have it on a VCD. I got it on a DVD, like, it's one disc. It has like four of these movies.
Yeah,
and they're probably all like three. It's probably like, you know... like 12 hours of movies on one DVD.
Those are probably
horrible.
Encoded even worse than VCD.
Yeah, I think it's probably worse looking than VCD, definitely.
Yeah. The two best things that we haven't mentioned so far are A, how Dracula is killed. So there's a spoiler alert. Yes. So after Dracula has captured Sheetal and has her on an altar in his hideout, which is somebody's living room, he's doing his Dracula thing, and she just gets a cross and beats him to death with it. So,
do not reveal the ending of Shaitani Dracula. Yeah.
It's the best murder of a vampire you'll ever see on film. Defeats anything from True Blood that can throw at it.
That's another thing that's great about the movie, is there's a complete failure to grasp sort of the very basics of the whole vampire mythos. Yeah. I mean, they get the idea that they're supposed to be crosses, but then what they do with the crosses, the cross, I think, on more than one occasion is just used as like a truncheon. She doesn't even like hold it up to him. She just starts wailing on him with a cross. I would love to see Peter Cushing do that to Christopher Lee in an old Hammer movie.
Yeah, just, you know, the new Twilight film. That's what they got. The sparkle vampires beating each other. So.
I don't even think, there's not even a stake, is there? Do they have she doesn't stake him or anything.
I don't think she just beats him down and then just leaves, and he's just lying there. I don't think he even dies. So.
Right. Like, well, you gotta
not disintegrate.
Things open for a sequel, right? Yeah. He doesn't turn into a skeleton.
Yeah, he just dies of
do that.
Traumatic brain injury.
That was good. That yeah, that is excellent.
Yeah. And then the beginning of the film has the James Bond theme remix with cat shrieks in during all the, so it's like
wow, I forgot that.
Yeah, and it's still while Dracula is speaking, so Dracula is also saying Dracula during the background of the song too, and it's the best James Bond remix I've ever heard.
Wow, so. And there's quite a lot of those in Indian movies. Yeah, yeah, is this one, because in a lot of those really low-budget Indian movies, there's just tons of ripped-off soundtrack music. I can't remember what else was in this one, but...
Yeah, I'm not that familiar with the soundtracks to pick up everything, but right. Like this is the obvious one that's in every...
Yeah.
Every country's films has James
Bond. Bond. Everybody rips off John Barry music. I do remember this film doesn't have a lot of musical numbers. I think there's just like a bit where someone has a beatbox and they turn a boombox and they turn the boombox on and does the guy lip sync to the boombox or something? It's like the shoddiest musical number I've ever seen in an Indian movie ever.
Yeah, they have one where like it's not anyone singing. They're singing, but it's like just girls dancing.
Oh,
something.
So they're just dancing to the boombox.
It's like, you know, they're on like the cliff and like the moonlight or whatever's behind them. Mm-hmm. So it's that type of shot. And
right.
While they're dancing in their skin tight costumes.
Right,
and,
right.
Yeah, so like it does reveal a lot of what seems to turn Harnam Singh on, which is tight red leathery costumes.
Yes. Yeah, it's definitely a hard glimpse into the mind of Harnam Singh.
Mm-hmm. But if you want to hear the James Bond theme, I rip that and it's in my review and it's also on my iPod and it comes up occasionally when I'm going jogging, so I jog along. The Chaitanya Dracula will always be with me, even if I never want it to be. So it's like a tattoo, you can't get rid of it.
Yeah, I can't say the same for Magic Lizard. There's like no real aspect of it that... I guess I could, like, you know, if I really wanted to torture myself, I could take that disco song for the beginning. Or Baby Elephant Walk. There actually is down on Mission Street, there's, like, one of those crane games that blares Baby Elephant Walk. Like, and it's true. Now, every time I walk by that, it's always blaring that out on the sidewalk, and it does make me think of Magic Lizard.
Oh, yeah. Maybe one day it'll be someone in a frilled lizard costume dancing outside there for like
don't give me nightmares.
This is San Francisco. That could happen.
It could happen. Right. Well, just the top half of the magic lizard costume and no pants. That would be San Francisco.
Yeah.
Trying to keep me from getting on BART, damn it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I think we're at the end of the journey here, but as... you all probably know we watch a lot of films from a lot of places, and so this list of our worst will probably be completely different in another 6 months to a year.
Yeah, so it'll be appended, I'm sure.
So we can easily make a sequel to this with no effort at all, just our normal viewing experience.
Absolutely.
So I guess we'll sign off for now. And anything you want to plug or...
No, fuck you, Magic Lizard.
Yeah, all right. And Chaitanya Dracula, we have a love-hate relationship.
Mm-hmm. Check them out.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us. Yeah.